more plausible, but the possibilities rather than optimism.
Okay.
This is a meeting of the House and Senate Finance Subcommittees on the Department of Environmental Conservation and the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. It's a work session on the underground storage tank program. And this is a continuation of the meeting that was begun on Monday. I've asked Eric Myers and my staff over here at the table to start a sign-up sheet. If there are people in the audience who would like to address the subcommittees, we will make that opportunity available in a few minutes. So I would appreciate it if you would sign up if you wish to speak to the committee. I hope that the members have brought with them their sheet of questions that was attached to the agenda. Does anyone need another copy of that? Janice, is this something the department distributed?
Yes. And I've given them all out, maybe someone could be interested.
Very good. And Representative Lippman needs a copy of the sheet of questions if we could. Their copy is being made. And present we have Representative Hudson, welcome. Lehman, Choquette, Miller, Phillips, Covenant, and I'm Kay Brown, and Keith Hilton and Janice Adair from the department. I'd like to focus today on the financial impacts or the budget impacts of the program, and I think the questions are pretty well outlined. If you could, I understand that on Monday, which I was not able to attend, you covered a lot of the material under general issues and some of the financial assistance issues, and that we're almost ready to start the budget issues discussion, so if you could address the questions as they're outlined here, that'd be very helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Janice Adair from DEC. I did bring a few extra copies of the packets we handed out at the Monday meeting, just in case somebody needed one. And there's two more here. I'll just go down the questions as they are on this sheet that we received and give you the answers as best we can determine them.
Okay, you're going to start under the budget, right?
Financial assistance issues.
Okay.
Or whichever you prefer.
Well, my understanding was a lot of the financial assistance issues got covered on Monday. Is that correct?
You are correct.
I think we'd like to dive into the budget issues.
Okay. This sheet that we handed out was intended to answer some of these questions. As the program is currently structured, only those tanks which are registered by March 5th can apply for financial assistance. As you see on the top sheet down at the bottom, we have about 397 tanks registered to date that would be eligible for that financial assistance. The second sheet will show you sort of in graph form what that boils down to. The black and the circle are the unregistered tanks. The white portion are the tanks that are registered. So you can see we have a fairly low turnout for registration to date. But until the registration period is completed, it's difficult for us to project the total demand for the program. The portion of $6 million that's been spent to date, $500,000 was taken for the program development. So there's $5.5 million left in the storage tank assistance fund. Of the $500,000, $245,000 are still available. There were a total of 11 positions authorized for the program, but we intend to only fill 8 of those. The other 3 are administrative positions, the 3 that we are opting to not fund. Those 8 positions are listed on this front sheet. The 3 that have an asterisk are the 3 that are currently filled. The registers for the other 5 have been requested and may be filled in as early as 6 weeks. The budget for the program costs are also outlined on this front sheet. Out of an approximately $564,000 that we estimate to operate the program, $338,000 would be for the technical assistance aspects, $113,000 for the administration, $85,000 for the board, and $28,000 for the regulatory or enforcement aspects of the program. As you well know, without legislation, there really is no opportunity for the department to put this program on a secure funding basis without, on a fee or tax basis. Initially, we anticipated collecting about $1.3 million a year in registration fees, but we also thought that people would be beating down the doors to register, and since it was required for financial assistance participation. And that hasn't happened, so we are revised our estimates now to about 785,000. Registrations are rolling in, and probably once the mail gets caught up from the fog, we'll have a tremendous number waiting for us. To date, we've collected $121,000 in registration fees. If there was no additional funding in FY92, we'd be left with the $5.5 million that was appropriated last year. We have requests to date of $1.6 million, and the last
page of the handout shows what we've got.
That shows the total for the different financial assistance programs.
That would be from the people who have registered so far?
Registered and asked for money as well, yes. And no review has been done of their request. That's real important to note. It may well be that what they're asking for money for is actually not an eligible cost. So it may be that, and these are probably not real firm figures in other words. If the FY92 budget request was significantly reduced, the amount that would be available for the financial assistance program would be reduced accordingly.
Is it correct that if they fail to register by March 5th, then they're not eligible for any financial assistance? Is that correct?
That is correct.
The way the legislation is written now, that's correct.
Thanks. Okay.
It would be operating in illegal system, so.
There is a prohibition on operating a tank that's not been registered with the state.
Representative Choquette?
Madam Chair, we discussed this at our earlier meeting, and we're in the process of trying to incorporate some changes to allow this to take place more fluidly. And I can brief you on that later.
Would those changes that you're considering affect whether or not we budget more money for this program in FY92?
No.
I wouldn't say
so. It would simply change the manner who could apply for it and where the weight for awards would go to the smaller as opposed to some of the larger
businesses.
Taking that up, I believe, in our next, at least our next published oil and gas meeting.
Mr. Kelton?
Madam Chairman, I'd like to make the statement that we are anticipating a large number of registrations and requests in the next week. We've been getting an average of 50 to 60 telephone calls a day as late as 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night on this program. We've established an 800 number so people can call in. And we're expecting that we're going to be receiving 70 or 80 registrations a day between now and March 5th. So the number that you see here may very well increase dramatically between now and March 5th, and we plan on March 5th to consolidate all the numbers that we receive by that time and provide them to the committees so that you will know exactly what the universe of requests is out there.
Representative Shokin?
Madam Chair, do you feel that the applicants it's fairly universal that this has gotten out to them, that they understand it explicitly, that they're working or trying to work within the deadline?
I don't think there's any question but what the word is out there. I think the question is why they haven't chosen to respond. They certainly know that 800 number is there, and that has received a whole lot less publication. We only put that out once. There was an 800 number. We're getting, as I said, 50 or 60 calls a day, and all these other registration forms and all the other requirements have been public noticed at least a dozen times. The direct mailings, newspapers, television spots, everything, workshops, in public hearings, all that's been out there continuously for 6 months, basically. Mm-hmm. Plus, there are several associations, the Auto Association, Alaska Underground Tank Owners, yeah, and Operators have passed the word to their members. So there's no question that the word is out there. The real question is why they're waiting to the last minute, and I suspect a lot of that has to do with the uncertainty of the program direction.
And also, Madam Chair, we discussed last time the cost involved in the fee. In the application fee. My concern is that, thank you.
Thank you. I have Representative Hudson and Carney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the administration, do you have a timetable or do you have an expected date when you'll start putting these grant programs out? I noticed that you've got X number of dollars worth of grants from applicants. When do you expect to start awarding the first grants out of this year's appropriation?
They cannot be awarded until the regulations are on the books. We have the regulations basically ready to adopt. We're waiting for approval from the administration to put those forward. We're ready to make grant awards, or we'll be ready to make grant awards as soon as the regulations are adopted.
But there is a procedure also once the, even if the regulations were in place, it would be required that the board meet and review the applications that had been received and rank them according to the priority that has been given in the regulations.
But they are meeting next week in June, so.
Yeah, 7th and 8th.
Then following up, Madam Chair, then it would appear as though there would be no appropriations made out of this year's appropriations. I mean, it's not likely that you'd get the regulations out, call your review committee together, and make awards during this fiscal year? Or
this is continuing money, as we understand it from OMB, so the $5.5 million could be spent until it's gone, and any additional appropriations, I would assume, would have the same availability in the sense.
This was in the money was in the operating budget, right? Was that handled with an effective date?
It was a part of the fiscal note. And actually, there is some question about this. We had asked when the bill was being drafted, we now being Senate Finance Committee last year, that the money, that there be language in there that would continue this appropriation. And we were told that that, in fact, had taken place then, but now there is a question about whether or not it did.
Talking to Janet Clark, who was our budget analyst at the time for OMB, it was her interpretation that OMB felt that the money was continuing appropriation. We don't have that in writing, however.
Go ahead. Question, is it in the operating budget or the capital budget?
It's in the front portion of the operating budget.
It's in the operating budget. It's very likely not continuing unless there's specific language in there.
There's every reason to believe that we would have time to make grants for the majority of those applications that are on file between now and the 1st of July. But, whether that, what portion of that money that would obligate, I don't know.
Or we could continue that in some other vehicle that's before us to roll that money forward. Representative Carney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. One, it seems to me that you testified earlier that some of these payments would be made retroactive. If people are doing the improvements now, you would pay them retroactive.
If they made the improvements prior to the effective date of the legislation, which was September 5th, 1990, but after December 22nd, 1988, they may apply for retroactive reimbursement for up to $200,000. And that is a
per owner.
And that is a specific provision within the legislation. And it is different than what happens after September 5th.
And there's a slight difference too. Those applications all have to be in hand by March 5th, regardless of when they registered. If those applications aren't in place by March 5th, they've lost their obligation, opportunity.
And that is a statutory deadline.
May I continue, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Through the Chair. Your primary concern in getting people to register is to identify and determine who's out there and what their needs are going to be. And I'm concerned that the fee that's required with each application could be a factor in the fact that you haven't received the application. Is there any possible way that you could take the application and then get the fee later?
The legislation states that the registration consists of a form and the fee, and the fee is set out in the legislation. So I don't know that we would have that flexibility since it is specific to the statute.
Well, I know the time is short. I'm concerned that a lot of people who need this help, the mom and pop, are going to be the ones who perhaps don't have the money. Don't have the money. Why apply if you can't have the system? It seemed to me that, I know the time is short and I don't suppose you could do it now, but it seemed to me that we could do that without harming the program.
I'm not sure we had the legal flexibility to do it since the statute mandates the submission of the registration fee with the application.
We will ask and see if that would be possible.
Yes.
I have Representative Lehman and then Choquette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has the EPA approved this program as qualifying for the, you know, the insurance portion, the backup, using general fund dollars, or will we be required to, and will you be endorsing looking at alternative sources of money, i.e. the user fee, a gas tax, or some other source of continuing funding?
By September 5th of 1990, so obviously that they're submitting payments that have already been, for costs that have already been incurred.
And that's true of the future people who get involved?
The future people, we will make grants up front for cleanup and for the closure and upgrading before they incur costs.
Technically, they could do it either way. For prospective people, applicants, they could have gone ahead and started the work and then said, you know, I'm not quite done, here's payment, here's the receipts for what I've done, and here's what I'm going to need to finish up. Or they could say, I can't even begin this, and I need money up front. So they could really do it either way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I think that it's an administrative decision as to how you process the application for registration. And it would seem to me as though you could accept an application subject to payment within 30 days or something like that, or however you wanted to do it. I mean, I don't believe there's any bar in the legislation to stop us doing that. I know from my past administrative experience that we have done those types of matters in the past. So you don't always get the money before you get going, you know, sometimes within 10 days or things like that. So I think that's an administrative choice.
Okay, well, it's a very good suggestion. We will look into that first thing tomorrow morning.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that same line of questioning, what is the possibility of extending the deadline?
Unless I'm missing something, I don't see how that can happen. I mean, the legislation says that 6 months after the effective date of the bill, you must register. experience.
Okay.
And I don't see how we could then say, as the, you know, as a department, not to pay attention to that statutory deadline. I don't see how we could do that.
Well, I think the answer then, Madam Chair, is that we have to do some legislation to give them more time. And I think that's worth considering, because it sounds to me as though we're creating some options for people without enough time for them to meet those options.
Madam Chair, if I could just say one thing, or a number of things here, so that everybody knows what we have done to let people know about this. Because I think that's real important to you folks. We held a series of 6 workshops around the state: Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, Dillingham, and Kodiak. All these forums were available. They were all well-publicized, PSAs, newspaper ads, full display ads, not just in the legal notices. We held 3 public hearings on the regulations in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. We've done mail-outs, direct mail-outs to all of the database, which is about 1,600 people, 4 different times. We have put notices in every newspaper in the state that there was a registration deadline, that the forms were available. We did one that said, did a computer scan of the EPA registration form and the state registration form, and said, you know, this is the old form, this is the new form, this is the form you have to fill out. If you haven't done that, you need to do that. So I just don't want anyone to go away from this table thinking that DEC has been sitting on this information and not passing it out to the public. We have done to the point where we have filled it out for people and said, all you need to do is sign this, and we'll send it to you. We're also having a registration workshop in both Anchorage and Fairbanks this coming weekend, and the database will be put on a laptop computer so people can check right then and there whether or not their tanks have been registered, if they have forgotten, if they've done it or not.
Thank you. Senator Porchelle, then Representative Coby.
On this, I was going to say it's probably not registered. It's not through your lack of letting people know. My guess is there's damn good reasons why people aren't registering their tanks. I mean, it's kind of like gun registration. Why it's not, if you're sitting there with a problem, you're not going to go wave it around and say, and then hope that maybe there's some of this change that comes dribbling your way to clean it up. More likely, it's going to be an albatross around your neck. The banks are going to know about it. The realtors are going to know about it. You're never going to sell your property. The vision would be you're never going to sell your property, and you're not going to get any help cleaning it up. But somebody may come around and tell you to, like, take your gun. They'll tell you to clean it up without the benefit. So, I got serious questions whether, A, you want to extend a deadline, B, whether people are going to comply with you, give them 5 more years to do it, and then finally, therein may lie the real problems. People who are not and will not ever register their tank or want to claim even ownership to it, they're just nagging problems sitting out there that... maybe they just go away somehow.
We've certainly been told by consultants that they have clients that have said that exact thing. They will not register their tanks.
I have Representative Kopanen and Navarre and Hudson. Representative Navarre.
Yeah, just on one point that Senator Porchelle made, and that was with respect to if they own the station right now. Believe me, the banks know. They're not getting any money. They're not being able to sell the property. If there's ever any information that might lead people to believe that there's an underground storage tank there, the banks won't touch it anyway. And it's a big concern for the people who have invested. The biggest concern, and my biggest concern, is for the people who have invested their whole lives or much of their lives into developing a small business that now all of the equity that they've built up essentially through this investment that they've made now potentially ends up turning them into a ward of the state. If we don't provide financial assistance. And I think that it wasn't due to a lack, in large part, a lack of the department's effort. I think that there's various reasons. Some people who own gas stations just either haven't paid attention or chose not to pay attention, whatever the reason may have been. I think we do need to probably extend this, and I think we need to have a renewed effort.
Representative Hudson.
Well, just following on Senator Porchelle's line there, I think I totally agree with him. I think many people inherited this problem, didn't realize they had a problem when they bought it. And they've essentially bought something, and now the terms and conditions have been imposed upon something they've acquired since. Mm-hmm. And that is a social problem, and it's also a personal problem for people. And I think we need to take a look at that as we are, you know, looking at this whole program. So I have a lot of empathy for for a lot of people who put their life savings into buying a service station, you know, a small facility with an underground storage tank, is now pervasively regulated.
I'm going to jump in here because I have a couple of questions that I wanted to ask. To be sure I understand the 1.6, and let's say after the deadline closes, there's 3 million projected, just for example. Now, would that mean that, okay, you came in and you registered before the deadline and you're seeking the assistance for the testing, but you don't know yet if you have a problem, and then in that process, you find out you do have a problem, are you then eligible to ask for more assistance? So we couldn't assume that just what's asked for as of the deadline would be all that would ever be needed, because that's just the first shot, and we're going to need more.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Just for openers.
The close-off date at right now, as it stands, for applying for either the cleanup assistance or the upgrading and closing, the prospective, not what happened before the effective date of the bill, is July 1st, 1994. The reason for that date is that by December 22nd of 1993, all existing tanks, all tanks that were installed before the effective date of the EPA regulations, which is December 22nd, 1988, have to have some kind of leak detection monitoring, either through inventory control or a tank type and periodic tank tightness test or some automatic mechanism. So by December 93, you have to have leak detection on your system. So theoretically, by July 1st of 94, you should know if you've got a problem. And which is the other reason why we required a site assessment or a tank tightness test in connection with the registration. So again, people would know if they had a problem and they could apply early, and the state could then figure out what it needed to do to get the funding and budget itself and have some planning involved here.
Okay, my next question relates to school districts. Are school districts eligible to apply here?
Yes.
They are?
Yes. And so are municipalities.
Although not many municipalities I see on this list have yet. I see Kenai Borough and Anchorage. But
Anchorage.
Yeah. My last question, and then I'll pick up the other reps who've asked to speak, is given that this looks to be, no matter how many people register or what, we could anticipate, you know, an ongoing need for funds here, are y'all amenable, is the administration amenable to putting this on a paying basis and considering some way to pay for it, such as the gas tax that was initially part of the legislation when it passed the House last year?
My understanding from Commissioner Sandor is the answer is yes.
Thank you. I'd also like to give this gentleman, we have one person who's asked to address us, and I don't know if your questions go to the department. Would you want to take a moment here and hear from this person, and then perhaps take up any more questions people have, or do you want to ask your question now?
Well, I think one of the reasons that people have refrained from licensing at some of the early cases, the contractors charged excessive prices for site assessments, and this got well publicized. I understand that the DEC has established a procedure, and this has apparently standardized the process. And so what, could you explain what you've done and whether that has brought the price of the work within a reasonable range?
I believe that the price, Madam Chair, site assessments has in fact started to decline. We were told by John Barnett, who's the executive director of the board, that he had seen one recently for $900. Within our regulations in Article 1, Section
198.
Is this on
Section 90?
Is it on that point, Representative Navarre? Different?
Oh, 090. Page 39 of the regulations set out what needs to be done in order to accomplish a site assessment. So it is more standardized. The EPA just said something to the effect that you need to take into account soil conditions and the location of the tanks and some other parameters. And we've given people the idea of where those tests should be done and where the soil samples should be taken and what you need to do with them. And I don't know what exactly has prompted the price to come down, if it's the fact that we've tried to standardize it, even though these regulations are not formally adopted, people are following them, or if it's simply because there's more people involved in the business now.
Yeah, we had a billing, I think, last summer of $15,000 for the site assessment. I hope that doesn't, you know, I think that's one thing that scared people.
Yeah.
Madam Chair,
we've
done several things to try to address that cost concern, because we shared the same concern there. By standardizing it and setting an absolute limit at the low end as to what we would accept as acceptable verification of a clean site, it prevents the consultants from going out there and perhaps drilling excess holes. Not that any of them might do that, but at least it establishes the location and depth of those holes, so they would have an absolute number to bid on for their services. And in addition, in the proposed financial assistance regulations, we have allowed the site assessment costs, once a contaminant is found, to be transferred over to the cleanup grant, where there's a much higher ceiling of dollars available. The site assessment is limited to specific dollars, and it can't go above that for what we'll reimburse, but there's a $1 million cap on the cleanup, so we're allowing the investigation of the contamination to be included in the cleanup costs. So we're trying to ease the burden to the gas station if they do indeed find a problem.
It's where you have contamination that the cost of a site assessment dramatically increases. And the other thing that we've done, quite frankly, is with the adoption or the proposed cleanup standards, which you don't have a draft in this set of the regulations, but I understand that they may be ready as early as Friday, the next draft. One of the things that we explained on Monday was our approach to the question of how clean is clean, because that's really central to all of this. And we've developed a matrix for the soil cleanup that depends on the soil type and the aquifer location and use, the amount of precipitation, so you end up with a more scientific and risk-based cleanup level than just a flat amount around the state.
I have Representatives Carney, then Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final statement about the sign-up. We draft legislation to provide funding, and done by these people with the statement that funding is available to solve your problem, provided you file an application. They will file, I bet.
Representative Navarre.
Yeah, I guess with respect to all this, the cleanup particularly, but do we have any plan to deal with the soils? Because there's going to be a lot of contaminated soils, and I can tell you there's no crying demand out there for contaminated soils. And even if there was, you can't transport it off-site. And there's no place to dispose of it. And that's a significant problem.
And it is something that is addressed somewhat in our cleanup breaks. And I mean, we are all certainly aware of the problems that you guys have down there in Kenai. And there isn't an easy answer to that.
We were somewhat hopeful that private industry would see a demand here and come in with land farming proposals that we could permit. And indeed, there's been some direction along that line, where in Fairbanks, we have two applications in for putting in rotary kilns to burn off the petroleum product that will take up to 300 tons an hour of contaminated dirt material, which then can be returned back for, construction activity. I don't think you'd want to make gardens out of it, but you could use it for road fill or other activities of that nature. So I think the demand will be met, but it's certainly lagging right now as to what they can do with it.
The coal we burn in the furnace is about the same quality.
Yes, Madam Chair, it'll be met in some of the more urban areas where you can have the economies of scale that would allow for that type of operation, but it certainly won't be taken care of in very rural areas or areas that you have to transport a long ways in order to take care of that remediation.
They can build treatment cells with vapor extraction, which theoretically should return the material to a safe level of contamination within 3 or 4 years, and that material could again be used, say, for landfill cover or other lesser quality uses.
There's also DOT statewide research is developing an experimental bioremediation, I think, system in Fairbanks that only cost them about $100,000 to build. And only that much because it's the first one. But I understand that if this really works like their test indicate it will, then they can take this thing apart and move it and just put it back together again, and they believe it will be very successful.
Did you get your question answered, Representative Phillips? Representative Phillips.
No, I don't mean to cast a damper on anything, but I really don't see how extending the life of the bill or offering all these incentives are really going to change the philosophy of the people that are not going to do anything regardless of what you do. And you know, it sounds to me like DEC has made a very strong commitment to the public, to get the word out to the public. And another 6 month time period, what, you know, is that gonna make any difference at all? Their reasons for not doing it have not changed. And I cannot see that a $250 to $500 fee charge is that significant of a fee amount to keep kept these people from filing?
Thank you. Representative Hudson, and Navar.
Well, I think I'm probably going to say that, first of all, I got a question, and that is, this may be the same one that Navar and I were talking to. Does that date that we put in the bill mean a date that has to be met from that point forward, or is that just for this year, or does it have to be annual?
Yeah, the registration is annual, and I think we've established the first part of December as the cutoff date. So for this year, and that registration form was in your packet on Monday, we reduced the fees by 25% for this registration year because it's a shorter registration year. But then starting, I think, in December, they would have to register again and pay the full amount, and it's annual fees.
But there's nothing in the law then that if somebody missed the deadline this year, they would still be able to, say, get into the program by hitting the deadline next year.
Madam Chair, no, Representative Hudson, there isn't, because to be quite honest with you, we really thought people would be rushing to register because that was the key to get them into the whole program. We did provide for a $10 a day late fee for every day they're late after, for 30 days. They've got 30 days grace, and then there's a $10 a day late fee that kicks in on their registration fee. But that was only anticipated being used in subsequent years, not this first year, even though it's not specific.
So that I clearly understand, your readout is that it's a one-shot thing. You must register before date certain, a few days away here now, or you don't get in this program at all.
Ever.
According to statute.
That's our interpretation of the statute, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's important to understand that.
Representative Navar.
Chair, I think that, in a little bit of answer to Representative Phillips' comment, that is that I could guess that for every station owner out there that hasn't registered, there's a little bit different reason for why they didn't register, and they haven't all not registered because they're afraid of what types of costs they might incur or problems they might incur if it is contaminated. A lot of them, I think, just don't know. They weren't paying attention. They have normal lives that they live in, and while they may have, they probably don't even recognize that this is a significant problem, and a lot of them don't even know that they're required by the federal government to replace their tanks. Maybe they just get a piece of paper in and it's junk mail to them. I mean, yeah, that may be what happens. I mean, there's a whole variety of different reasons why it's not happening. The intent, as I recall, at least behind the law, and what we were trying to do was provide some assistance so that in the long run, if there was a contaminated site, it was recognized early enough so that it didn't become a bigger problem. And in the final analysis, if the station owners do not have the resources available to take care of the problem, it falls on the state anyway. That's who the eventual person who's going to pick up the tab in any event is going to be.
Thank you. I have Representative Choquette, then Phillips, then Menard, and then I'm going to ask that we hear from this gentleman in the audience before we wrap up our meeting here. Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Senator Pershaw is correct. I think there's people that aren't going to fill out that application and send it in for any reasons whatsoever. I think Representative Navar is correct also. I think that the intent of this legislation was to clean up the underground storage tanks, and it would be not in the best interest of this state to not try to do all we can to achieve that goal. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Phillips?
I've got a couple of questions for Janice. Janice, have any applicants filed an application with you and said, I cannot pay that fee, but I'm going to file my application anyway? Has anybody done that? Has anybody even asked about that? All right. And my second question, do current regulations that we have on the books right now prevent, are they significant enough to keep this problem from occurring year after year after year? For somebody that, say, comes into business 5-10 years from now and puts in tanks. Good. And then develops a leak somewhere along the line.
Madam Chairman, I think the short answer is no. But it probably is needed. If this legislation were not here, I think a substitute that could be put in place to address future problems would be some type of installation standards, which would say the tanks that go into the ground from now on cannot be bare steel without any coating, that they have to be a certain standard of construction, certain standard of insulation. that might prevent future problems from occurring, but there is nothing in our regulations that would now catch a problem before it occurred other than this proposed piece of legislation.
So a person that was coming into business 10 years from now and developed a leaking tank and there was all this problem, there would be no, they wouldn't be covered under this, and they wouldn't have any avenue for any kind of assistance.
This House Bill 220, Madam Chair, said that in order to be in this program, and this is probably something that hasn't been specifically stated, had to have been installed before December 22nd of 1988. Because after that date, if you installed a new tank, you had to do it according to the EPA standard. You couldn't do that. And without this, if you took this whole program and junked it, EPA still stands. And you could not by EPA law, which DEC would be enforcing for EPA, or EPA would be in here enforcing for itself, install a new tank. The significant difference would be is that the EPA would be enforcing it more instead of making sure that these guys understood what they were supposed to do, which is what DEC really wants to do here.
We do have a gentleman here from EPA that I'll call up in just a moment if we can get through these. Did you have more questions, Representative Phillips?
No, thanks.
Thank you. Senator Menard.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think as we have gone around the table, it is a complex issue and has many different alternatives and stuff. And I think one of the things that we tend to focus in on is a service station owner. And it's not only the service station owner. There's a wide variety of people that are out there that have underground storage tanks. And one of the things getting into the process, if we have federal mandates coming down on businesses that will bankrupt those businesses, the issue is, do we try to assist them and keep them in business, or do we let them go out of business and we wind up with a problem anyway? So there's many things that go around here. I think we have to, with diligent efforts, try to keep the program going, try to at least, we just passed the legislation, we just have the board that has been working on it, they're coming forward with regulations, and there are some things that we have to get a little bit of a time out there before we look at, then there may be some slight changes, but to defund the program or stop the program, I think has grave concerns for the state of Alaska, and I think we have to be involved in the process, and we have to work through it. So I've been involved in it, and I'm willing to work through it. I'm willing to listen to some ideas, but I'm not willing to give up the program, and we'll look very concerned. When we started it out, we did start out with a tax on it, and we did look at a mechanism. We got it through the House, and it didn't work out over on the Senate side, but I'm willing to look at some of those avenues and see. We had a lot of controversies on both sides on that. Thank you.
Hold your remarks for just a moment, and let's hear from this gentleman. Mr. Renner indicated that he'd like to speak, and also we have Mr. Torek from the EPA, and we could hear from him or allow him to answer any questions. And if y'all could just stand by for a moment, sure. We'll wrap, come back to you.
Hi, Madam Chairman. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak and other members. My name is Terry Renner. I'm president of Alaska Underground Tank Owners and Operators. We've been working with the legislature the past 2 years on this legislation. And first off, I'd like to say we're all for a clean environment. We didn't go out there to pollute or anything else, and all these federal mandates are coming down on us, and we'd like to clean the place up. I'd like to say there's two sides to the coin. One, you help us clean up and help us keep Alaskans employed so that we can keep in business, or the other side where you drop the funding on this program and then after we're bankrupt, the state ends up cleaning up anyway. As a owner and half registered, I'd like to say I haven't registered yet, so I'm one of them out there that haven't. And I'd like to give one reason. It's going to cost me, I have six tanks, and it's going to cost me $4,500 to register. Now, I'm not saying I'm not going to register, but I'm going to put this off right up to the last moment. So I'm under this program, and I know how badly things could be if everything came down on you. There's a lot of other people out there that choose to put their head in the sand, and $4,500 is a lot to dish out to them, and they just maybe won't even register, period, because of the amount of cost. And the second reason I'm kind of waylaying on it is because once this March 5th deadline, or whenever you register till March 5th, you have 1 year in which to do your tank testing or your core drilling and site assessment. And I want to make it as close to spring as possible, because if you do ever have any problem and you core drill, then you're going to be working the winter time if you would have registered clear back in January. And I'd like to, one quick comment on Representative Phillips, when she was saying that I'm asking about 10 years down the line. Well, the EPA mandates, and you've got to have like cathodic protection on the tank, and it's going to be where you have to have line. There's what they call Tidal systems and such, where you can instantly tell when you've got a leak anymore. The things have been upgraded, and by 1998, all tanks have to be upgraded. And if legislation like this doesn't get passed, then you don't have to worry 10 years down the line there isn't going to be any small businessmen putting in tanks, because it's only going to be big business. And lastly, but important, I really think that a good point to bring up is right now the bank support's totally cut out behind us. Until this legislation gets enacted and gets online, the banks aren't going to come behind us, so we're not going to be able to do any upgrading, period.
Thank you very much. Thank Are there you. Questions? Representative Hudson.
What kind of assistance will you be looking for if you were to register? Testing, financial backup, what would you be looking for, sir?
Well, right now I have turned around in, on my oldest unit, I've turned around in core drill, which cost $9,100 out of pocket, which wasn't easy to come by. Thank goodness they commercial fish there, because he ain't making it in the gas business. But anyway, that's one of the assistances that I'd file, is on the $9,100 that I've spent. I think I can recover someplace around $4,000 of it. And I did have slight pollution on one well there, but
how
most of it checked out.
There's
a mandatory $1 million insurance policy supposed to be coming up October 27th of this year. And that's another downside of this, is that without being clean, you can't get insurance. And to get insurance, you're going to have to core drill. And if you core drill and find out you're dirty, then you got to turn yourself into DEC, and you've pretty well put yourself out of business. The reason we had a lot to do with placing this tank registration so high, and we wanted to show that we were willing to give something, we weren't willing to just hold our hand out and say, just give me money. And we placed this high because we were hoping this would become the insurance policy. So once we did upgrade, then we could go out and buy our own insurance. But it's kind of backfired on us, and now it doesn't meet the insurance aspects, and we're sitting here paying high tank registration fees.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Terry, 2 years ago when we were first starting this, and I was involved looking into it, there wasn't insurance available from private suppliers, or there was only one that I think that we found. It was, or maybe it was a reinsurance fund, the Lloyd's of London Fund, and it was very costly. Within the last 2 years, I'm not aware, but I assume some other insurers have moved into the market. Do you know, can you identify if they have, and if so, have those rates come down?
The rates have come down if you're clean, but the trouble is, I was involved, I think I've testified or told many of you that the reason I became involved in this was, to make a long story short, there was a road expansion at one station that I was just leasing. The one engineer said he smelled gas. The DEC came out. They had monitoring wells drilled. And at the end, there was no leak of tank or lines, but there was spills and overfills, and the ground was polluted. And it's cost to date over $200,000, which isn't eligible for, it was prior to December 1988, so this is none of the cost I can come back on, and not trying to. But it nearly bankrupted two companies there. And it didn't have a leak in the tank or lines. And that's when we became aware of the problems. It was ongoing. I'm sorry if I dodged your question. I got the yak.
Go ahead.
Let me continue. I saw a head shaking in the back, probably from somebody who has more information maybe than you do, Terry. And if the gentleman there, if you'd come up and identify yourself, or maybe you're going to testify later, can I respond to that? I'd sure appreciate it.
Just a quick comment. We understand there are a number of...
Would you identify yourself, please?
John Barnett. I'm Executive Director of the Board of Storage Tank Systems. there are a number of insurance carriers out there now. We have seen a spectrum of premiums that are available. A small tank owner on board has stated that he has received a number of quotes from insurance. But again, the bottom line is that you must have a clean site first before you actually are eligible for that insurance.
Madam Chairman, excuse me, Lauren, that's where I lost my train of thought there. I had insurance at the time. It cost $5,000, but they never paid back one penny because they said it was prior contamination. So if it's existing contamination, and it's very hard to prove, they'll turn around and duck out, and I paid a $5,000 policy and never paid me a dime back.
Representative Phillips.
Terry, would you just refresh my memory, please? Why was December of 88 chosen as the cutoff date for accepting tanks onto
the program? That was when all this came into effect, right, Steve? Yeah, that's when they officially enacted the rules.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments. Steve, did you want to join us here? And I just ask you to identify yourself and give you the opportunity to comment on any of the things we've been discussing that you, I'm sure, have thoughts about.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Stephen Torok. I am Chief of the State Operations Section for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency here in Juneau. There's a number of things that I think I can offer, hopefully as points of clarification, and not to repeat for other members of the committees that were met with us on Monday too much, but when Congress passed the enabling statute or legislation for it to require EPA to establish the underground storage program or storage tank program. A couple of points that Congress made very clear to EPA. One, it was their intent that this program be operated and implemented by the states, not the federal government. In so doing, they did not fund EPA with very much operating funds in order to implement the program. Two, they made the program basically into two arms. One arm was the underground storage tank program and instructed EPA to design it to be a preventive program due to the, in their terms, the epidemic of failing tanks across the country that was being evidenced at the time. The other arm of the program is the Leaking Underground Storage Tank Trust Fund, the LUST Trust Fund. That program they established as a transition funding source to assist EPA, which could make those funds available to the states, to clean up sites where there was no identifiable responsible party, but that the contamination was due to leaking underground storage tanks, either in the past or currently, but there was no responsible party easily identified. The LUST Trust Fund program is intended to go away eventually, just like the Superfund program is intended to go away after the LUST Prevented program are implemented within the states, and down the road we have safe tanks either installed as new ones or being replaced or replacing all the old tanks, thereby reducing the need for a cleanup program. With regards to the progress of the state, EPA has been very pleased with the progress that the legislature made last year with passing, which we feel to be a very key piece of legislation, House Bill 220. And also we are very pleased and encouraged with the progress that the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation has made over the last few months in developing regulations to implement House Bill 220, which we feel they did on a fast track, but not at the expense of quality. We feel very very pleased with those regulations. I need to attempt to make clear anyhow that with regards to the state's program being accepted and submitted to EPA, if there are really two parts as well. There's the program, which is the regulatory side of the program. The underground storage tank regulations, the criteria for the tanks, how they would be installed, when, and et cetera. Those regulations are what the state has drafted to date, and those regulations will have to meet federal requirements in order for the state's program to be approved. The other aspect, which is often being confused across the country, is a state developing a fund. A fund is a form of either financial assistance to state owners, or a fund as a substitute for the financial responsibility or liability requirements in federal regulation. As I understand the current version of the state's drafted regulations, the state has adopted the federal financial liability requirements regulations by reference. Consequently, the incorporation of an assistance fund is not necessary for EPA to approve the state's program. That is on the will of the legislature if it wishes to provide financial assistance to tank owners. So I guess the attempt to put it blunt, EPA does not care to what level the fund assists tank owners or in which manner a fund, if one is continued, is administered. As long as the state's regulations adopts by reference the financial liability requirements, as well as the third-party liability requirements, which I understand the state regulations do. So that's an important distinction.
Does this mean that the small operator does not have to get liability insurance for $1 million this October?
No, that does not mean that. It means that the federal regulations require tank owners to obtain financial insurance or $1 million insurance in some way, form, or another, either through insurance or self-insured or some other mechanism. I think it was passed out to members of the committee a list of funds that, or a list of states that have gone the route of using a fund as a substitute for the financial liability requirements in federal regulation. That first list, states with approved funds, starting with Alabama, those funds are in fact a substitute. That is how the state is going to have their tank owners meet the financial responsibility requirements.
Okay, was that not what our legislation was trying to achieve?
I think you probably would need to speak first to the original sponsors of the bill, but it's my understanding that at one time it was a desire to have the state develop a fund that would in fact cover and provide the insurance for tank owners. As it is now, it is not. It's merely to provide assistance. And I think to give a scenario, has already been testified, if your site is clean, there are insurance carriers that will write you a policy. So if your site can be documented as being clean, you can get insurance, and thereby you can meet the federal requirements. It's the sites that are not clean that currently cannot get insurance, probably regardless of what the price of an insurance policy. They can't get it. The state of Alaska's system appears to want to provide some assistance to those tank owners to provide the mechanism by which they can get their site clean. Once their site is clean, they can get insurance. And that's fine with EPA. It's not a requirement for your program to be approved by EPA because your state regulations still have in there reference to the federal regs that require financial liability. Regardless of how it's done, tank owners are responsible to get financial assurance. The fact that the state is providing a fund to assist tank owners in getting themselves into a position where they can get insurance is notable. I think that's a good move on the part of the state, especially with the number of small tank owners in the state.
Thank you. Senator Menard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Taking off that, you have Idaho Star, and it's a model program. What do they do?
Well, I believe we provided, Mr. Madam Chair, Senator Menard, I believe we have provided some information on the Idaho program to the state. I am not that familiar with it to explain what it is. My understanding is that it is something along the lines of a revolving loan fund that the state initiated with some seed money and then perpetuates itself that in fact does provide insurance for all tank owners. I would like to make a clarification on the list that we have given you. At the bottom of the list, it says states with fund under development but not submitted, and Alaska is the first state on that list. I would put an asterisk by that, by Alaska, and indicate that as the state's program is right now, you're not proposing to EPA a fund that would be a substitute for the federal financial liability requirements. So I would not necessarily refer to Alaska as a state that is developing a fund that is a substitute for the regulations. It merely is a fund to assist tank owners to get themselves into a position to get insurance.
A couple of questions. I'm sorry.
Well, I noticed some of the members are leaving, and since a number of them have already heard this, I wonder if we might just have some wrap-up discussion here about what we're going to do about this problem. Unless, is this an urgent question, Representative Coburn?
This is for EPA. Does EPA have, is there a law or an EPA statute that would prohibit the delivery of fuel to an unregistered commercial tank? In other words, are these people going to be cut off at the pass at some point if they don't comply?
Madam Chair, President Copeland, the federal regulations do require that all tank owners, all regulated tanks, notify. If a tank owner has not notified, and then yes, they would not be, they would be operating in prohibition of federal law. And in the state situation, since the state has adopted regulations that require a registration, which is a substitute for the notification, if they have not registered, my understanding is, and you might best direct that question to DEC, but my understanding is that they would not be allowed to operate.
So a distributor would be breaking law himself to deliver
That's
such
right.
a type.
I know we have people that...
No, now or in the future.
In our proposed regulations. Thank you. I'm not sure where we are exactly. What I gather from this situation is we still have an open-ended liability, and I feel that we should look at a way to make this program self-sustaining, especially if we're going to consider broadening it at all, extending the deadline or letting other people come under it that are not now covered. I have an indication from Bill Hudson, who had to leave, that he was looking at making it a low-interest loan program with a tax associated with it. And I just wonder, is there any level of consensus about where we should head, Senator Porchow?
New on the scene on this particular program, but I am uncomfortable with the exact direction that's set in statute right now. And I think, as Representative Choquette aptly put, I think there's a little truth in both these sides on why people don't register, but to the extent they don't register, it defeats part of the thrust of the program. I also think that the general fund scenario, given what we suspect is the real problems out there, is not going to be viable over the long run, that much like catastrophic illness program that was just a couple of $1 million TF fund every year, it met a fraction of the need, and really a little bit was no particular good against the whole liability of the program. It seems like that we need to review the whole program in terms of the statute and look at perhaps Idaho and some of these other states. It seems like, as the EPA man said, that we may be assisting to some small degree, but we haven't really met the liability in lieu of the insurance obligations through the fund. I think we may want to review the whole statute.
Could I ask Senator Menard, wasn't that our intent? That's what I remember.
That was the
major driving force behind this was to meet that problem.
It was one of them, and we thought that, I knew that the tax most likely would meet it and would be accepted, and it was the form. I think there was some hope that possibly the GF funding would be acceptable, but apparently it's not going to be acceptable, so we'd have to look back on the liability. But the other side of the question, that was one of the driving forces, Madam Chair, but the other side, of course, was to see how we would get into the situation and assist people that were in business that were going to be going out. But one of the driving things was the liability, and of it, without a doubt. And we proposed a tax, which I knew, I felt, would be accepted, but it didn't work out that way. As it came over to the other body when I was in the other body.
You're in the other body. Well, I guess my assessment would be that we are not doing violence to the program if we fail to put the $4.5 million into the 92 budget, because we do still have a significant amount of money that can be rolled forward to begin some kind of assistance, and that any additional funding should be carried on a fiscal note of how it's going to be paid for in the future. That'd be my thinking about it. And I'd be open to other members' comments on that. Representative Choquette.
Madam Chair, Senator, the bill left the House last year. I'm trying to, and it carried a provision to help small businesses.
Right.
And that provision was deleted in the Senate when it left the Senate.
Correct.
Do you feel that there would be any support for putting that provision back in?
Well, the issue in the way that structured was that there would be a priority for tank owners with 12 or less tanks in the funding process. That was the wording that was in there. The other side of that was that then it was changed to a board, and the board would go ahead and review the priorities and make allocations on which get cleaned up according to criteria of health and safety and water quality and all this other type of stuff, and prioritize it down. And the issue was to structure the board so there was a balance between small business, big business, and everything else. There are some things that are achievable, and there are some things that there's politics involved, and you got to balance out the whole thing in order to move the program forward. And that was one of the issues that came along as far as the politics of it.
Did you see any different climate this year? Really? Thank you.
Although it seems that forcing the issue by not continuing to fund it out of the general fund would certainly help that situation.
Well, yeah,
it?
I mean, it would force some things back to the table. I mean, there would be some issues to look at. There are, you know, while DEC would be in favor of the fuel tax, DOT probably would not. And then you go back into that scenario, and then you have the APC and the highway users and everyone else against it because they want all those funds to go into highway maintenance and everything else. So you have to pick up and assess what the political realities are and where you are and pick your fights and move forward.
Is it accurate that unless we get some kind of secure source like that, we're not going to meet this financial responsibility requirement? We're not going to satisfy that?
Well,
if we don't do that, is that accurate?
I guess we'd have to talk to EPA, and that is my understanding. I'm not speaking from authority on that issue, but I guess Mr. Ford, as far as the funding source we're talking about, as far as EPA accepting the funding source and liability, what other alternatives are there other than tax on the fuel? What have they approved in other states?
Madam Chair, the EPA has approved loan funds as well as tax, and states such as the state of Washington is a reinsurance fund. Basically, the state underwrites the policy for all tank owners. But again, Madam Chair, without a fund that would totally serve or provide financial assurance for everyone, the fact that your regulations as they currently exist, adopt federal requirements that each tank owner has to provide financial assurance, that is acceptable to EPA.
I understand that, but it doesn't meet the problem we were trying to fix.
No. If I may, what the scenario that is being discussed between EPA and DEC with regards to
Okay.
A way that